had been around. It has been 30 years. And they want to know, you know, what is it? Why should they listen to it and so on? Let me drop. What is the technical net? It's the gathering of the clan, the relatively enthusiastic, serious ham radio operators that want to know how this hardware works and how to make it work better. Inside of a real ham radio operator, in my opinion, is a scientist trying to get out. And so working in the field of ham radio gives them a lot of the pleasures that they would have if they had the resources to get a doctorate degree and work for a pure research place like Brookhaven National Laboratory. Well, not all of us have that opportunity. So this group gathers, and they teach each other how the hardware works. We try to tap into that huge brain trust. There's a huge amount of brain power in the tri-state area of northern New Jersey, southern New York State, western Connecticut, and much of Long Island. This repeater you're listening to has moderately good coverage of that area, so we tap into that brain power. And what usually happens is that somebody asks a question, somebody in that area says, gee, I've got some experience in that. And they chime in and give us the experience. They give us the benefit of that experience. And as such, a lot of information gets transferred. Let me drop. Let me give you a warning. In the 30 years, there have been some boring technets. Only one or two, but there's been a couple of boring ones. And some of the rest of the ones are a hell of a lot better than that. There is no guarantee. The subjects being discussed are the subjects that you bring as questions. So if the technet is boring, well, then you guys got to ask some more interesting questions. That's almost never a problem. The schedule we have slowly evolved over the 30 years. It's an evolving thing, the technet, and we've now come up with a menu. And the menu is during the first hour and a half, we take questions from people. They give us their call letters, their name, and say, yes, I have a question or a comment. And we try to somewhat briefly go through those during the first hour and a half. That's followed by John, KC2WGB, tapping into his mailbag. For people who don't yet have their ham license or don't yet have the equipment so that they can sign in and talk to us live, they send an email, snail mail, pigeon or whatever, carrier pigeon to John with their questions, and sometimes they get some darn interesting questions. And tell these, some of these guys who don't yet have their ham license are going to be damn interesting hams. Good job. So after three or four of the mailbag questions handled by John, we then go over to Paul, WS2N, who is our space expert. And we get an amazing number of people who are really interested in what National Aeronautics and Space Administration is doing. And Paul explains that to us, tells us the latest thing they've launched, what they're doing with it, and so on. After those three things that I just mentioned, the next thing on the menu is for the rest of the night, we discuss slightly more serious subjects. We dig a little bit deeper. Some people don't like that, in which case, be forewarned, that's what's going to take place. You don't have to listen to this particular channel late at night on Sunday when the machine would ordinarily be quiet. You've got 799 other channels on your 2-meter synthesized radio. So there are people who try to control things and say, I don't want you just doing that, discussing those more serious subjects. Thank goodness they're in the minority. We get a significant number of letters from people who say, you guys go pretty deep. I didn't understand it, but I'm excited to hear it, and I know if I hear it enough times, I'm going to start understanding that deeper subject. Let me drop. You should also know that there is a beautiful website by Mike Perry, KC2NJI, in which he has recorded the last 6.5 years worth of technets. You go to his website at www.amateurradio.tangovictor. Amateurradio.tangovictor. You go there and you look up the Limoch past technets, choose the right year, the right week, the right Sunday, the right month, the right Sunday, and they're in 1-hour reels. And what some people do who can't stay up late at night, the technet starts at 8 o'clock, ends at midnight for the last quite a few years. In the beginning, by the way, let me drop it. In the beginning, the technet used to be 1 hour. And into, all of a sudden, I'm thinking of his call letters, HIP's call letters, into FDJ. He and I ran the technet way back in 1982. It started down by a mysterious process, and we thought it would last for a month or two. We'd answer everybody's questions, we'd dry up and go away. We antenna you've ever dreamed about. So the bottom line is, if you want an antenna engineer today to run that portion, that department of your wireless electronic company, you're building wireless products, and you need an antenna engineer, you're probably going to have to hire an M radio operator, because that's where the real experience and the real smarts is coming from, most of the time, in my opinion. Let me drop. So, I was starting to say that we started off with 1 hour's worth, then it became two, then three, and now it's 4 hours worth. At my request, the machine automatically turns off, the repeater turns off at midnight, because some of these guys are so enthusiastic, we would go until the sun rises. On a couple of occasions, we came close to doing that. And so some of us have got to go to work the next day. But for the guys who can't stay up that late and they want to hear the TechNet, because it's all recorded, and each individual week's worth of TechNet will appear on Mike Perry's website, amateurradio.tv. A few days later, sometimes it's almost a week later, but the latest TechNet will eventually appear there. People will download it into their recording device, listen to it as they're driving to work, as they're sitting on the train, on their lunch hour. For those who can't stay up late, that's a way that they can still get the TechNet if they want to bed. And let me drop.
Comments on the amateur radio TV day.
Yeah, go right ahead, John. And by the way, I should have mentioned that the TechNet nowadays is being run by three and a half guys. KQRIW, you're hearing him. John, KC2WGB, you just heard from him. Paul, WS2N, who gives us our space report. And lately we've also been getting some good comments from Hal, K6DPZ, who can only stay with us for the first 55 minutes of the TechNet, but Hal is trying to teach me how to be more brief, because I am quite verbose at times. But John's got a comment. KC2WGB, go ahead, John. K2RIW.
Very good, Dick. Good evening. And good evening, Paul. Everyone else on the net. Just in case anybody is having trouble, on Mike Perry's website, the August 4th, Bernie sent him a message that is not finding the address, so that is not available, but that should be rectified soon in case anybody's looking to review the one on August 4th. All the other ones are working fine. Just wanted to let you know that, Dick. KC2WGB, back to you.
And the Bernie he's referring to is Bernie K2YO, one of the board of directors of Limark. He has a beautiful website you can go to. I think it's bernie@huntfamily.com, in which various people will list the particular URL. In other words, quite often you'll hear us, particularly late at night, discussing a particular website we've gone to. And so if you want to join the party, so to speak, and you want to know where is that website, and some of these websites have got a URL that's a mile long, and so we will file them on Bernie's site, bernie@huntfamily.com, if I've got it correctly. See, there was another comment I was going to make. Alrighty. The first hour, you're going to give me your call letters, your name, and the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment from the net. You need not sign in because you're listening. After 30 and a half years, we believe somebody is listening. Otherwise, we wouldn't still be here. And I'm also not going to ask that very mysterious question a hell of a lot of people ask whenever they're running a net. Is there any emergency traffic? I don't know why they do that. There never is. I'm not going to ask that question. So you're going to give me your call letters. And by the way, we also don't need a long list of names of people who are listening. We believe somebody's listening. So if you really got a question or a comment, you're going to give me your call letters, your name, and the word yes. A typical sign-in would sound like this, KD2BHY, Jim, and yes. So Jim is one of our frequent sign-ins, a man who's had his ham license a rather brief period of time, and that's the way a typical sign-in would sound. So give me your call letters, your name, because I'm so darn forgetful, please give me your name, and the word yes if you've got a question or a comment, and do so right now. K2RIW and the TechNet, we're listening.
Hotel Foxtrot.
UM, yes, short stay.
Okay, now let me go back. Things are getting chopped up. I'm pretty sure, thank goodness I heard Hotel Foxtrot. NS2, here. Hotel Foxtrot is Dennis. I recognize him. Victor Mike, something like that. Give me that one again.
AC2ZUM, Zebra Uniform Mike, yes, and short stay.
Okay, and Mr. Short Stay, what is your name, sir?
And good evening, Dick.
Very fine, Al. Okay, so far we've got Dennis and Al. Anyone else to sign in with a question or a comment? Give me your call letters and name right now.
KC2SYL, Bill, yes.
WS2N, Paul, with a space report, and yes, follow up on last week's antenna topic. Good evening, John. Good evening, Dick.
Very fine. So far we've done Dennis, Al, Bill, and Paul. Anyone else? Give me your call letters and name right now.
KC2WGB with a comment on bird watt meters. Anytime, Dick.
Okay, some mysterious guy named John. Anyone else? Last call. Give me your call letters and name if you've got a question or a comment for the DECnet. Okay, we have more than enough. First guy on the list, the first man on the runway, is Dennis, NY2 Hotel Foxtrot. Way out there in Cutchogue, I think it is, in that neighborhood on the North Fork. And I'm hearing rumors that you're about to get a nice, tall antenna support structure, possibly located on your QTH. Dennis, looking forward to that. Anybody who puts up a radio tower, it's one of the significant portions of something you do, significant in your life, and most of us get a hell of a lot of a pleasure out of that tower. The most significant thing I've done is to put up this 100 feet of Roan 55 tower in my backyard. I do a lot of bragging about that. So go ahead, Dennis, NY2 Hotel Foxtrot, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Thank you, Dick. Actually, your information is impeccable. I can't believe that you actually knew that, but my question for the net is, how can we entice younger people into getting into ham? What's the proven way to get these people into ham so that, we can keep filling the stock, so to speak, and, they can enjoy what we enjoy? I'm just wondering what, if you know, or anybody else on the net knows, what's the best way to get the young people involved?
Don, good question, John. Dennis, I guess what we're doing right here, right now, John, KC2WGB, and I get a significant number of letters, not every week, but they come in piles every so often, of people who have some kind of a radio scanner. They go scanning across the frequencies. They find on Sunday night something called the technical net. They listen for a while and say, gee, these people are having a lot of fun. Boy, I think I'm going to join that. You'd be amazed how many guys now have a ham license because they found us on their scanner. So we've got to make it sound attractive. And there's 26 different kinds of ham radio. I mean, the one you're listening to right now just happens to be 2-meter FM repeater-type ham radio, a very significant one, an extremely popular one, number 26. But there's a hell of a lot of other people doing them. Meteor scatter, moon bounce, HF, VHF, UHF, SHF. I claim to be a member of that group that loves the frequencies above 1,000 megacycles, and sometimes I'll put on the end of my emails, no frequency is high enough. Because if you look at the past history, starting off with Clinton DeSoto, I think his name was, he wrote a book way back in the 20s called 200 Meters and Down. I mean, the frequencies above a couple of megacycles were considered useless. The FCC gave them to ham radio operators, and we suddenly found out, gee, by way of ionospheric reflection, and with modern-day tubes they had in those days, they could suddenly start talking tremendous distances. We heard a report last week, which you can think of the guy's call letters right now, of where with his QRP, his 5-watt transmitter, when he recently got into ham radio, he talked to somebody in the Caribbean. And it was amazing how little power could do that. So there's always new things to be discovered. Let me drop a
quick comment on that.
Repeater, timeout.
Yeah, John's going to refresh my memory as to who the awful nice guy was. By the way, it's very easy for us, Dennis, to say that, gee, you look at all the youth in your neighborhood, in your house, and your friends' computer games and the internet and whatever, and very few of them seem to go into ham radio. And it seems to you and me like, hey, we're going to the dogs, and this great hobby is not being experienced. It's easy to come to that conclusion. But if you take a look at the FCC records and read some of the editorials in QSD magazine, the number of hams is continuously increasing. It's now up to something like 700,000 ham radio operators in the United States alone, an all-time high. From your and my point of view, it's only the white hairs that stick with it. You know, we think the average age of ham radio is increasing. Not necessarily. So on top of that, you do a good serious search of any of the developed countries, United States, Canada, Western Europe, Japan, Australia, whatever, you'll find out that in almost all of those countries, the ratio is the same. Let me drop it. And the ratio I'm talking about is there's one ham radio operator per 500 in the general population. One person in 500, I think that's a 0.2% of the population, decides to become a ham radio operator. It has almost always been that way. Also, by the way, you'll find that the guys with a private pilot license is one of them per 500. Now, among the ham radio operators, the guys who are above 1,000 megacycles, there's one of them per 500 hams. So now we're really getting into the creme de la creme, we think. You know, one per quarter million in the population are the really serious guys building and using equipment above 1,000 megacycles. And one of them is a good friend of mine who's building equipment of his own hand design at 243 gigahertz, 243,000 megahertz. So how high can you go? Do you get a nosebleed when you go up that high in frequency? The FCC has done something very comfortable for us, and that is they recognize the real value of ham radio operators. Let me drop. They have given you and me, free of charge, one extremely, fantastically expensive chunk of real estate. We own a piece of the spectrum, the radio spectrum, that very valuable frequency spectrum, every single octave of the band, 80 meters, 40 meters, 20, 15, 10, and the walk bands in between, 50 megs, 2 meters, 220 megs, 440, 432 megs, 1296, 900 megs, every octave of the band. A significant number of kilohertz or megahertz are given to you free of charge. Once you pass that ham radio license, every piece of electronics that you build with your own hands, every transmitter you build, is automatically type accepted. When it comes to the commercial world, you're not allowed to turn on that transmitter unless it is an approved design by the FCC that has been type accepted. You need a fancy license to do it. You fight real hard. You go on a long waiting list to get one single channel to run the dispatching for your oil company or your taxi cab rig or whatever. And they find out that these ham radio operators have all of these megacycles given to them free of charge, every octave of the band. And for a darn good reason, we've made very good use of it. You could easily say that cell phones, which is the most reproduced piece of radio electronics on planet Earth right now, something like 6 billion of them in use, that was designed by a ham radio operator, a good friend of mine, and he doesn't get credit for it. And the first hams to do that kind of communication by way of phone patching through repeaters really was hams. So they get a lot in return, and we do a very good job most of the time of policing our own frequencies and keeping everything very legal. You want to make a comment, John? Please tell me the call letters of this nice guy that told us last week about how impressed he was that with his tiny little transmitter, he was talking to somebody, I think it was in Cuba. KC2WGV, K2RIW in the Tech Man.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout, cancel.
For about $40, there's three of them, one girl and two boys. They were really encouraged, and now they're working to get their license. I showed them how they can construct a very small antenna, you know, the coat hanger antenna with the SO239, and they're really enthused, and they are now studying to get their tech license. So that's approximately three hams in the neighborhood that have been encouraged with ham radio. Quite interested, but always thought it was expensive. So that's one of the things we have to explain to them, that it doesn't have to be expensive to get started. But that works, and that's a good way to encourage them, I believe, anyway.
transmission for about 2 minutes. Unfortunately, the first minute had timed out, and the second minute, when you dropped, the machine reset and came through. I was hearing you on 147.375. The eastern link of the machine was repeating you, but the main machine that people are listening to on 85 right now, the first minute got dropped. So why don't you repeat your first minute? I think you're describing your evangelizing. In other words, by you showing the kids in the neighborhood how much fun it is and it ain't so expensive, that this hobby is not that difficult to get into, even though the advertisements and the magazines will lead you to believe you have to spend $2,000 for your first rig. KC2WGB. Make sure we drop for the four beeps, John. K2LIW.
Sorry about that, Dick. I thought I did. Three youngsters visited me. They were working on a school project for the first part of the opening time of school, and they needed a digital scale, so they came to borrow a scale. And when they looked at the lab, you know, they were quite interested. And then they saw the shack, and quite interested in ham, being a ham. But they thought it was expensive. So I let them use my Wooksons, and they were going around the neighborhood while I was watching them, and they were transmitting back and forth. They had a ball, and they were out for about an hour, hour and a half. Then when I explained to them that they could get started for approximately $40-$50, plus making a simple coat hanger antenna, you know, with the SO239, and I showed them, you know, and that I would give them some advice and help, extremely interested, but they thought it was too expensive to start. So that's, I tipped them on that. Now they are studying now for their tech license. So I think I'm going to have three new hams in the neighborhood. They live within like five blocks of me, and they just know that I have a lab, so that's why they were visiting. But that's one way. We got to tell them that it's not, doesn't have to be expensive. Back to you, Dick, KC2WGB.
K2OSR with a comment. Bob recognized. Get to you in a second, Bob. And well done, John. That's the way to get enthusiasm, is to really show them. Hands-on touching of the hardware is a hell of a lot better than a person waving his hands in the air and saying fancy words. The next best thing you can do is have a good blackboard or a whiteboard, and you draw pictures. If you're good at drawing, you can get a point across. But you bring in a piece of hardware, as I've done. I'm a member of the IEEE Long Island Consultants Network, and I'm discussing about the antennas I work on and whatever, and the pieces of hardware, radio hardware I've worked on. When you bring a piece of hardware in and you hand it to them and they put it in their hand and touch it and turn it over and look at it, boy, does that really show. That's sort of what John is doing, as you can tell. By the way, I strongly recommend you guys go to QRZ.com and dial in the call letters of KC2WGB, John, and just take a look at the pictures of the stuff that's in his laboratory. Yeah, it looks like it's $1 zillion worth. John's one of those very lucky guys who fell in software. Somebody dedicated quite a bit of that equipment to him. And so he's got one of the nicest labs in the five boroughs of New York City, in my opinion. Bob, I bet you you've, by way of the Boy Scouts, I bet you you've experienced showing people hands-on hardware and radio direction finding and so on. Give us a few words on that, Bob. W2OSR, K2LIW in the Tech Man.
All right, this is W2OSR, and good evening to everybody on the TechNet. You're on a subject very near and dear to my heart, trying to get young people involved in the hobby. I do it through the scouting program with something called JOTA, Jamboree on the Air, which will be coming up this October. And this year I'm going to be trying to do it out at the Boy Scout camp for the first time, and hopefully we'll get some good response to it. I will have to say, though, in all the years I've been doing JOTA, none of the kids have gone on to get their amateur radio license, but we keep plucking away at it. And the entry of a company like Balfong into the market with an inexpensive HT has been a boon to what I'm going to be trying to do. Also, we'll be teaching a radio merit badge course at the Cradle of Aviation Museum, which Limark is getting involved with, and we're trying to get more and more people interested in the hobby. So we're trying, and in a great many cases, we have some success.
Keep it up, Bob. Well done. I was hearing a new ham on this week on this particular repeater. to Echo Papa Sierra, a lady who just, I think it's a lady, I'm not sure, who just recently got her license and discussing how much fun it was to be using it. And if she signs into the TechNet one of these times, I'll ask her for some of her early impressions of what the first few experiences. Her license was issued on August 8th. Wait a minute, August 21 on 2013. She's had her license for days. Is that a new hand? So I hope she signs in to give us a few words. So as I see it, Dennis, who asked the original question, it's not as pessimistic as you think. The percentage of hams is always increasing. The percentage of the population in the developed nations, United States, Canada, Europe, and so on, is always the same. It's only 1 per 500 in the population. Of course, that seems too small to you and I. Let me drop.
And one other comment, Dick.
Very fine, John. Get to you in a second. It always looks like there's not enough of them. And our youth is going to the dogs. We're not at the kennel yet. I mean, in the Roman times, everyone was positive they were going to the dogs, if you know what I mean. But once you recognize that it's 1 per 500 in the population is ham radio operators, and whether you do that survey in 1970, 1990, 2013, you're going to get very close to the same ratio. You and I would like the ratio to be higher. You'll always find that there's a couple of Johnny Appleseeds, particularly in New York City, for instance, where there's a guy who starts fiddling with ham radio for whatever reason. His buddies come over his house, see it, and all of a sudden you get a nest of ham radio operators, because that particular guy became an Elmer. In other words, that's the word we use for, the slang we use for people who act as an instructor and act as a leader to teaching people what it's like. Electronics, hands-on electronics, doesn't have to be expensive, as John was telling us. I mean, you go to that website of Kent, Whiskey Alpha 5, Victor Juliet Bravo, Whiskey Alpha 5, Victor Juliet Bravo.com. You go to his website where he sells these very nice green printed circuit VHF antennas. Let me drop. And you go to the second page on his website, where he shows you how to build coat hanger antennas. And whether you're building a ground plane, a 4-element Yagi, or a 13-element Yagi. You take a piece of wooden stick as the boom, and pieces of coat hanger wire, and you cut it up to the right length, following his formula, following his design. And he's got patents on the way, by the way, that he feeds that antenna. You'll get a kick out of that. But the driven element is a patented design by Kent. And I added to his patent. I recently got a patent on antennas that quote his patent, if you know what I mean, because I added it to one of mine. And so what I'm getting at is that for $3 worth of hardware, the most expensive thing there will be the SO239 connector that you connect to this antenna. You can build a hell of a lot of performance in an antenna for $3. You can also go out and buy $350 worth of antenna. And the performance between the two, in many cases, is not that different. So you pay your money, you take your choice, and the ham radio operators are amazingly crafty people. You'd be amazed how many times these guys have found ways of using straight pins and straws and rubber bands and whatever to do some very precise measurements of weight, radio signal strength, and so on. And as I've said before, in your business, where you're building wireless hardware, if you really want somebody who understands radio, you're probably going to have to hire a ham radio operator. And one last comment I'm going to tell you on this one.
And why 2HF?
Okay, and we're going to go back to Dennis, right after John. I'll hold off on my comment. John wanted to make a comment. KC2WGB adding something. K2RIW, go ahead, John.
KC2WGB. Yes, Dick, one thing I forgot to mention. These children are quite bright, and they're doing very well in science, and they are extremely interested. One thing I forgot to mention was the fact that I showed them their voice on the oscilloscope with a microphone, and they were twisting the knobs. They were having a ball, but the interest and the questions they asked, very interesting, quite in-depth for people who were not exposed to RF communication. So that also helped trigger. You could see it in their eyes as they were looking at the equipment and the playing with it. And I told them also that if they needed the SO-239s, I would supply those, no charge. And the Kodak wire, whatever they needed. You know, they could get a Radio Shack. But it looks like, I'm pretty sure all three of them are going to make it. They're bright enough to pass the test, I'm sure. But I just thought you'd enjoy that. If you would have seen their faces light up, it was a pleasure. I always love that. KC2WGB, back to you, Dick.
Well done, John. From my point of view, by way of that website you and I can go to, QRZ.com, and you dial in KC2WGB, and you look at the photographs of the equipment that's in his laboratory, which really is the garage behind his house, is where all that's contained. You bring a child into a laboratory where you see all of those dials, and an oscilloscope is one of the most fun things to use. I mean, the very first time any of us own an oscilloscope, and you see your voice on that screen when you speak into a microphone that's connected to that oscilloscope, almost everybody can become enthralled with that. So you've got one hell of a classroom there, John. Out of curiosity, is there a whiteboard or a blackboard in that laboratory of yours, or do you have to use great big sheets of paper to draw diagrams when you want to make a point with those children? Over to you, John, for that one.
Yeah, Dick, I do have a whiteboard that I have to pull out from behind the rack to write on, but I also have a huge drawing board that's 3 foot by 7, so that's where I really let them pencil out and do whatever they want there. But yeah, I have a couple of drawing boards.
So as you can see, Dennis, I think the story is a hell of a lot better than first meets the eye. You and I would like every fourth kid in the neighborhood to become a ham, but when you realize that the real ratio is 1 per 500 in the general population, it's a hell of a lot better than first appears. NY2, Hotel Foxtrot. Dennis, who asked us a beautiful question. Go right ahead, Dennis. K2RAW on the TechNet.
Thank you, Dick. Excellent conversation. And KC2WGB, John, you know, great. The reason why I asked the question was, there had to be a bell that started to ring when we had Irene and we had Sandy, and the internet went down, and we had all the young people scrambling to try and communicate with their friends. And I think that's something that's they're going to remember, that they weren't able to get through. There was also somebody who broke through. I don't know if you heard this, Dick. Somebody broke through and asked an excellent question. They wanted to know if you could ask anybody on the net, who is the youngest person on the net right now? Back to you, Dick.
Very fine, John. I'm waiting long enough to make sure all the machines get reset so we don't time out again. Don, good question. I'm going to ask that one in a minute. Well, so you guys get ready. I'm going to ask the question, who is the youngest ham you know of? Know of or is on the net now, whichever way you want to answer it. But to my knowledge, the most educational hobby there is that we can choose in technology stage, maybe more educational than computers, because every single high school kid thinks that computers are the be-all, end-all, and they are very significant. But when it comes to radio knowledge, you'd be amazed how educational this hobby is, because it gives you immediate access to people with a similar interest, and you have a conversation back and forth. I'm using the so-and-so antenna. Now I used to use the such-and-such antenna. This one is working better. This is what I had to do to tune it up. Real information is passing back and forth. Let me show you another secret. I claim that my greatest strength to humanity is the ability to be able to design antennas. And my name is on 28 antenna patent applications. That's my brag. Okay. So therefore, I interface with antenna engineers in the antenna department of a number of companies over the years. And I'm amazed how many times I will find on their bookshelf a particular book that quite often is stacked on the bookshelf backwards, where you can't see the spine of the book, but you see the pages. But I recognize the book immediately. Let me drop it. And the book I'm talking about is the American Radio Relay League Antenna Book, which gets updated every year or two. They've got one of the latest issues of the Antenna Manual from the American Radio Relay League, the the Organization of Ham Radio United States, they've got a copy of that book on their bookshelf as a commercial or military designer of antennas, and they've got this ham radio antenna book on their bookshelf. Quite often turned around backwards, you can't see it. And the number of times they use it is obvious because you can see how many of the pages are dirtied, dog-eared, and got pieces of paper in them for markers and the paper clips and whatever. And that's only second to the Antenna Engineering Handbook by Henry Jasek is the original copy. And I was fortunate enough to work with Henry Jasek, by the way. A whole bunch of stories along those lines. So, alrighty. Of the people who are listening right now, if you happen to know of a relatively new ham and or young ham radio operator, give us your call letters right now and tell us, first give me the call letters and your name, and then I'll refer to you guys all in order as to the youngest ham you know of who may be on the net tonight, or just the youngest ham you know of in your neighborhood, or you recently met, or so on. The youngest ham you know of, give me your call letters right now, K2IIW in the TechNet. A little bit surprised by that. Everybody's afraid that they don't have the youngest. Let me try one more time. The youngest ham you know of. Give me your call letters and name. K2LIW in the TechNet.
W2OSR.
Bob recognized. Anyone else? Okay, Bob, you're it. W2OSR. One of our directors of the TechNet, of LIMOC. K2LIW, you got it, Bob.
Yeah, okay, Dick. Well, I don't. Apparently, he's not listening tonight, but I know he does listen in sometimes. Is James over in Port Washington? Who I'm not even sure if he's in high school yet. If he is, he's in the very beginning years. Over.
When I heard Jim on for the first time, and he signed into the TechNet quite a few times, I believe he told us he was 11 or 12 years of age. Does that sound about the right number that you remember, Bob? Go ahead.
Yeah, because I think he was in junior high school. Because I was trying to help him out with something, and I asked him if he had taken algebra yet, and he hadn't taken that. Now, how many years am I out of school now? I don't remember what grade we learned that in. Over.
I think the first acquaintance with algebra in some schools is 7th or 8th grade, maybe 9th, but somewhere in that neighborhood. So in the vicinity of 12 years of age is one of the frequent sign-ins of the TechNet. So I don't think the situation is quite as glum as you think. As you look at the statistics, the total number of hams in the United States is the highest it's ever been, continuously increasing. QST Magazine editorial a couple of months ago said that we just passed 700,000. And so... because we've got 330 million people. You work out the mathematics, and I think it turns out to be one ham per 500 in the general population in that neighborhood. So hang in there, Dennis. And as the hams on the North Fork of Long Island see that beautiful piece of hardware that I think in the next year or so is going to go into your backyard, and they knock on your door because they're curious, what is that? You're gonna become a Johnny Appleseed for ham radio operators on the North Fork if you want to be. A brand new person along these lines, and one more crazy story I'm going to tell you. A person moved in to the adjacent property to me, and they were cutting down some trees because of Hurricane Sandy. Because Hurricane Sandy felled a number of trees, and this person with a couple of young children worried that the tree might hit the house and possibly represent danger to the children. Let me drop. So that even the trees that survived Hurricane Sandy that were near the house, they were having a professional service remove some of those trees. I heard a lot of noise going on, walked over there and introduced myself, and I said, have you recognized that tower over there on the adjacent property? In other words, my radio tower. And they said, yes, what is that? And I said, that's my ham radio operation. And the lady said, what is hand radio? H-A-N-D, Hotel Alpha November Delta. What is hand radio? In other words, she had never heard about it. She was a lady from New York City, moved out to Huntington, where I live, just moved in the last 6 months, never heard about ham, Hotel Alpha Mike radio. She thought I was saying H-A-N-D radio. Obviously, I had to do some explaining. not quite as well known in the general population as we'd like to be known. And maybe there's ways we can correct that. And with any further comments, we'll go over to the next person, K2RIW and the Tech Man.
Victor David Henry with a comment.
Thank you, Dick. Thank you, John. Thank you, Paul. TechNet is just a great asset. I just hope it keeps going on. NY2HF.
Hey, with a testimonial like that, Dennis, well done. And, hey, John, we got to send him a bill. Having some fun with him. Victor David Hotel, please give us your full call and name and go right ahead with your comment.
Okay, fine. This is Dick. Yeah, the call is WA2, Victor David Henry. Name is John. I just wanted to make one general comment about ham radio in general. And actually, the way that some people get into it is through shortwave listening. And I've noticed that, I don't know, in the United States, there doesn't seem to be an awareness of shortwave broadcasting in general. I know I've been in the Caribbean and in Mexico, and you find that a lot of people have shortwave radios. They listen to BBC, they listen to Canadian broadcasting, but it doesn't seem to be an awareness of shortwave broadcasting or shortwave listening at all in this country. And that's one thing I think that might help encourage ham radio as a sort of an entrance into it. Go ahead.
Okay, I heard another person. I'll get to you in a second. Those scanners that we can buy very inexpensively these days allow people to scan across frequencies like this one and find what hams are doing. I vaguely remember one of the ways I got into ham radio in my youth is because I had an old AM radio on the table. I was doing some service on it. I guess I was around 12, 14 years old at the time. And I found out that when I mistuned the RF amplifier section, it would get the image frequency instead of the real frequency. It listened to frequencies above 1.5 megs instead of below. And I started hearing 80-meter ham radio operators, or was it 160-meter ham radio operators? And I also started hearing them on channel 1 of the old RCA 630 television set way back in 1947. There was a channel 1, which is what you and I now call the 6-meter band, and there were guys operating on that band. And we tuned to channel 1 with that old RCA television set. You were hearing the hams, and you start asking yourself, what is that? Gee, those guys seem to be having a good, fun time. Who is it that just wanted to sign in? Give me a call with us again. K2RIW in the TechNet. Okay. I heard your signal come through on 3 occasions for a fraction of a second each time. We never heard a single word, so there's not quite enough RF coming through. I'll come back to you right after we go to Al, and we'll give you another chance. Maybe you can move to another location. One of the things that people have to worry about is that if you're using a handy-talkie and you move around the room until you hear the signal the strongest from this repeater, and then you transmit back, you assume you're in the best location. Many of us forget about the fact that we're transmitting on one frequency and receiving on another. So when you move to the right location in the room that gives you the strongest signal on reception, it isn't necessarily the best location for the strongest signal to transmit back to this repeater. You may have to find another location. Al, who lives in Fishkill, which is a good number of miles away, I'd say from me, does it tell me the number of miles? Yeah, 93 miles. Up there in Fishkill, you're a good number of miles away. I wonder how you're talking to us, Al. Kilo Charlie 2, Zebra Victor Mike, if I got it correct. K2RIW is the technique. You got it, Al.
Dick, I got some info for you, W2OSR.
Okay, stand by, Al. Bob has a point of order. Go right ahead, Bob.
I wouldn't call it a point of order, but I just did a little searching on the internet because we were asking who's the youngest ham. There's a young lady who's 8 years old, lives in Florida. I guess she was 8 when she got licensed, which was 2012, a little over a year ago. Her call sign is KI4 Delta Sierra, Kilo India 4 Delta Sierra. And there is a YouTube video of her talking about ham radio, so, you know, there are some of them out there.
Glad to hear that, Bob. Yeah, I'm not worried.
worried. It's easy to become pessimistic that there are not enough hams in your neighborhood. The youth don't seem to be going there. And it's not any different now than it was 10, 20, 30 years ago. Yeah? In our youth, we associated with other hams. We thought everybody, as smart as we were when we were young, were hams. Well, that's a generalizing from the particular, if you know what I mean. So it's not as bad as it seems, as I see it. Al, Kilo Charlie 2, Zebra Uncle Mike, or Victor Mike. I think it's Zebra Uncle Mike. You've got it, Al. K2LAW.
Thanks very much. Good evening to the group. Good evening to you, Dick. I'm coming in on Echolink. The only way that I can get into the Mymark repeater, I'm up here in a fifth kill in a condo and can only operate on indoor antennas. If I put something outside, it results in a $300 fine per week that the antenna is there. I like my landlady, she likes me, so keep the peace. We'll just work for indoors for right now. But here's my question. I am in the process of thinking very dearly of getting involved in 6 meters, and I'm looking at a couple of 6 meter rigs, 6 meter VHF and sideband. And my question was shortly in two parts here. One, I would like to know what the 6 meter activity is in the tri-state area. Is it worth getting into? And is there any recommendation of a good indoor antenna? I was thinking about a hamstick. Right now, my antennas are mounted on microphone stands in my living room. So I'm thinking of a hamstick, one vertical for FM, and the second one, you know, I would swing it around horizontal for 6 meter sideband. And that's pretty much what my question was today. And let me just close with, I was looking at the Olinco monobander 6 meter or the Yaesu 900. Those are the two rigs that I was permanently looking at that point. Back to you, KC2Z. I'm here coming in on Echolink.
Very fine, Al. Before I proceed, give me a quick assessment. The land around where you live in Fishkill, are you in the valley or are you on top of the hill? Is question number one. And in the apartment you're living in, are you in the first floor or are you on the 13th floor? I'm trying to find out your altitude compared to the surrounding terrain, because it will make a significant difference in the way we give you an answer. KC2ZUM, K2LIW. Go ahead, Al.
Okay, I'm in the valley, and I'm on the second floor of a two-story complex, and I believe my balcony is facing east. That would be south. Actually, it's facing south.
Yeah, as I look at the map on QIZ.com, where Fishkill is, it looks to me like you're on the eastern side of the Hudson River, but the Hudson River is a kind of a valley that Mother Nature cut between the mountains, so you're not on high land, and the second floor facing east is not an extremely high location. As such, if you're willing to put a Yagi on the roof of the house, I know you can't, if you're willing to put a 3, 4, 5, 6 element Yagi on the roof of the house, 6 meters to you is going, under those conditions, with single sideband, 100 watts of single sideband, you'll find a lot of people to talk to, and you'll think the band is very busy. If you take a simple hamstick antenna inside the building at a low location, you will think 6 meters is dead most of the time. It's unfortunate, but that's the truth. If you happen to have a group of hams that just happen to fall in love with 6 meters and they live in a town within 10 miles of you, you'll have a lot of people to talk to. Good job. 6 meters is a fun band, but it's not quite as popular as 2 meters. I think you're going to get a little more bang for the dollar at a 2 meter single side band. The antennas are smaller. To build a 2 meter Yagi, and mount it inside the apartment. You can do that to build a 6-meter Yagi where the elements are 9 feet long, and mount that inside of an apartment and rotate it, essentially out of the question. So I'm not trying to be discouraging. I'm just giving you my first impression of what you're likely to run into with living in the valley, living in a slightly rural area by New York City standards, and using a low, vertically polarized hamstick-like antenna, omnidirectional antenna. The number of people you will hear and can talk to on 6 meters is going to be a fairly small number. When the band opens, yes. When you get a sporadic E opening, and you're hearing these booming signals coming in from, let me pick a number, Texas, Illinois, Wisconsin, places like that, 1,500 miles away, 1,300 miles away, during a band opening, you'll think the band is like 20 meters. But that only happens to that degree that I'm discussing, a couple of hours per year. And is that worth making the investment? So I'd go a little bit slow. If you run into a rig that's inexpensive enough at a flea market, and you're willing to make the investment, buying a used piece of equipment, and treat it correctly, you probably, if you want to, a year later, can sell it and get 80% of your money back. To buy a brand new $1,500 piece of electronics for a band that you don't know about, with the kind of antennas you're going to use, as you know, I've said so often, let me drop. On almost all VHF frequencies, there are three things to make an antenna work well or to make communication work well. Altitude, altitude, and altitude. And also gain. In the case of 6 meters, if you can put up 3, 4, 5, 6 element Yagi with a little bit of altitude to it, outside of the house, getting close to clearing the trees, you'll think that band is the best thing since baked bread. But with much simpler antennas down low in the valley, I'm a little bit discouraged on what I think you're going to hear. It's worth trying to borrow somebody's piece of equipment, or if you can find one inexpensively used, you buy it and try it, and you can always trade yourself back out of it. Go for it. A scanner, worry a little bit about what's the noise figure and sensitivity of the scanner if you use one. A scanner used on those frequencies, listening to single sideband. And by the way, that's where the majority of the real 6-meter work takes place from my point of view. There are 6-meter repeaters, without a doubt. Nowhere near as popular as the 2-meter repeaters. But the real range of hams talking to ham is on single sideband. And the single sideband guys, if you can hear them on the particular scanner you got, for instance, my ICOM RS7000 has a single sideband capability. And that would allow me to scan and see what's down. So, as you can tell, what I'm telling you is a little bit discouraging, so I don't want you to have a false impression of what you're, of how popular that band is going to be from your point of view, Al. And by the way, as you do this research and find out, please come back and tell us what you find, because there's a possibility I'm dead wrong. I hope I am. Kilo Charlie 2, Zebra Uncle Mike, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay. First of all, I thank you for the interview. I would like to say I have been successful with 2-meter sideband using a TS700, which I bought pretty cheap on eBay last year. Now, you should know I made quite a few contacts with that rig using the Comet GP1, which is vertically polarized. Using any kind of the Yagi indoors here was kind of dangerous. A lot of RF off the back end of the antenna, which basically interfered with a lot of other devices in the apartment here. I do have what I think they call the NLA2 Halo, which I bought for 2 meter sideband. I'm still experimenting with that. If I get good results with that, then I was thinking maybe I would get one for 6 meters. But for 2, I did pretty good, fairly good, during the last contest and during field day. And surprisingly, did some good results on 10 meters here with a dipole, wire dipole that's just strung up over the living room made it out as far as South Carolina. So that told me the radio was working and I don't have to bother Andy to check it out. But thanks very much for that. I will research that a little more and see what happens, and definitely get back to the group and let you know how we made out. If I've got your calls correct, KTREW, I believe that is, KC2ZUM, back to the group. Thanks very much, and again, good evening to everyone. We'll be listening for a little bit here.
Very fine, Al. Good luck with that project. Please report back to us. I'm K2 Romeo India Whiskey. Amazing number of people hear my call letter said fast, and they think I'm saying L-I-W or sometimes R-E-W. I'm K2 Romeo India Whiskey. And glad that it works so well on 2 meters for you. By the way, 10 meters, particularly now that we're near the peak of the sunspot cycle, even though this is a rather weak sunspot cycle, 10 meters opens up a hell of a lot more frequently than 6 meters. 6 meters, very rarely does the maximum usable frequency get that high from the ionosphere, and that other kind of propagation called sporadic E, where you get a peak of sporadic E in May and December. The one in late May, early June is a big one, where a sporadic E cloud goes racing across the sky at 180 miles an hour, literally, and it gives you a fantastic amount of reflection. And some very strong signals are in there for a couple of hours at a time. But other than a sporadic E opening, you're not going to get anywhere near as many band openings. The 10-meter strong signals that you heard, when that ionosphere is reflecting the signals, it makes the signals you hear on 10 meters literally...